I think Instagram knows when I'm thinking about getting a tattoo again, because it starts showing me all the tattoo artists and studios that I follow. I think it knows. Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Aftermath. I hope you all enjoyed UFC 281 and your adrenaline's finally come down and you've got some sleep. What a card it was. What a card. What a weekend for fights, if you didn't know Cage Warriors was on also, and that was excellent. Excellent. I'm going to show you a little clip from it in a minute, because my friend Judo Jimmy Warlord picked up the welterweight title. Very, very slick performance against an incredibly dangerous Mateusz Figlak. Incredibly proud of him. We all are. Okay, right. What are we talking about? I've got a sponsor for this. I've got to tell you about first. Manscaped. You already know Manscaped, because they're everywhere. They're all over UFC stuff. These genuinely are very good, though. I'm not just saying that because they're a sponsor. I need a trim right now. I've let my face grow out, but I use these regularly. I even take them on the road when I need to cut my hair before I do a show. Like my hair is thick, and that shit will just crunch its way through it. It's very, very strong and powerful. I've got to give you this read. Like, I couldn't say anything better than what Manscaped have written already. I mean, the way that they, because of course it's Christmas, of course the whole thing is, you know, people need gifts. There are lots of people in your family that probably need something like this, and you don't know what to buy them as a gift, and, you know, now might be the year to go have one of these. So they've got the Platinum Package, which it's basically got everything in it you need. It's got a body wash. It's got a 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner. It's got a deodorant. Of course, it's got your clippers as well. Let me give you this read, because of course it's all about Christmas. It's never too early to play holiday music, and it's never too early to start thinking about gifts, which is very true, because I'm terrible at being on time for gifts. Fortunately, Veronica's very good. So she keeps me keeps me well planned in that department, but I'm terrible at it. So here's a shout out to a lot of people that will be listening that are terrible for gifts. Whether it's for a friend or the friends in your pants, you can make this season jolly with Manscaped. Honestly, I could, like this. Here we go. It gets even better. Do your little drummer boy a favor and use the Lawnmower 4.0 to avoid another silent night in the bedroom. Then add Manscaped's top of the line shower products to have the people thinking, all I want for Christmas is you. Santa cares about your sack, of course he does, so should you. So the code is Full Reptile. It'll get you 20% off. It'll get you free shipping. Go and get yourself the Platinum Package, one of these, or get it for someone that needs it. They are excellent. And the other thing as well, this is the main selling point for me, honestly. Because Manscaped have got really, like, really deep wash bags. And I always carry loads and loads of stuff on the road with me. And I often lose things in it. Honestly, that light on there has helped me find so many toothpicks and new razor heads and all kinds of things in my wash bag. So, you know, little tip for you there. You've got a little wash bag torch at the same time as a wicked bit of kit. So get that anyway. They're the guys sponsoring us for the podcast. Go to manscaped.com. You'll get 20% off if you use the code FullReptile. And, you know, get on board. Get on board. Okay, right. UFC 281. I'm sure we've got some comments in the live stream. I'm sure we're going to have some questions. There were lots of talking points about it. It was a hell of a card. What I'll do is I'll kind of rattle through and I'll give you a few of my thoughts on a few different bits, and then we'll have a few questions. Generally, I mean, the card was fantastic. We didn't do great on our picks. Veronica was following as we were watching. We didn't do great on our picks, but the ones that we were right on it. And someone did say in the comments on the YouTube, they were like, Dan's definitely going to gloat on the live stream about how accurate he was. It balances out, you see. This is the thing. I like to do wild picks sometimes. I like to have a bit of fun with it. I'd rather get all of them wrong and get one of them absolutely on the money, because then I'm going to sit back and I'm going to go, got that one right though. Doesn't matter about the rest. I'm not bothered. MMA is so chaotic. You just can't predict this stuff. Anyone that has good percentages for predictions, you have my respect, because, you know, I look at these and I see 10, 15 different outcomes, and I usually choose the one which I find is the most saucy, like Dustin Poirier subbing Michael Chandler, which we're all surprised with. But, you know, it was going to come eventually. And like I said to somebody in the comments on YouTube, Chandler could have been subbed before. You know, if Charles Oliveira decided to sub him, he could have done when he dropped him. You know, sometimes there's a situation which will arrive. Like sometimes you'll say something, well, this fight's going to end in submission at some point in the later rounds. And people will just go, that person won't get submitted. And they don't think about all of the other factors that lead up to it, the wild punching exchanges and the grappling back and forth. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into getting a submission. This is why Daniel Cormier or Khabib, they're so good as champions, because they've figured that pattern out. And they're very good at making people tread that path over and over again until they're tired. Look at Daniel Cormier against Anthony Johnson. Like, you don't want to be standing trading punches with that guy, but what you do want to do is take him down over and over again, exhaust him, and then take his back and choke him out. It's a very smart way of fighting, and that's the difference between those two guys. I actually had a question on Twitter. First question that came through from where is it? There it is, from our friends at MMA Slam Podcast. It were two questions. The first one is, do you think Chandler is hurting himself fighting for the fans and for a show rather than intelligently? I mean, I think we all know the answer to that question. Like, I get that he's like 36 now and that he's kind of thinking, ah, oh, well, you know, we'll just go out with a bang and make some money. And I don't know. The recklessness of the way that he fights is, although it's fun to watch, I feel like he's doing himself a disservice fighting like that. I don't feel like he's representing the martial artist that he is, that we saw through Bellator, that was starching people with single shot punches. He's a great fighter. And I feel like if he pulled back like 30% on the let's have a brawl and make some money, he would extend his ability to make money in big fights. Now, the benefit in the situation that Chandler's at, I know we've kind of jumped straight into the main card here. The benefit that Chandler's got is that he's worked himself into a situation where it makes sense for McGregor to fight him, right? So you look at his last five fights. He stopped Dan Hooker in the first round, lost to Oliveira in the second, lost to Gaethje in the third, beat Tony Ferguson early second, and then has just lost to Poirier. Like, you know what you're going to get with Chandler at this point, or at least that's what those results look like. And that's kind of a suitable opponent for Conor McGregor if he's coming back, which, Uncle Dana did say he is at the press conference. So the benefit is that he might get that, you know, the red panty night. He might get the big payday. But I do kind of wish he would just kind of pull back just a little bit and show us some more of that, you know, single punch power and that wrestling to the back to rear naked chokes that we saw in his earlier career. Because he could be a contender in this division for, you know, a couple years longer at least. I just think he's kind of riding it till the wheels fall off now. Yeah, I don't know. The other question was from MMA Slam Podcast. Do you agree that Izzy was in control out in the open, but backed against the fence, but backed against the cage, most vulnerable? We talked about it in the podcast and the breakdowns and stuff. Like, he's very, very good at slipping and moving away, but he needs space behind him to move back. And Pereira didn't allow that MMA range that Izzy kind of thrives on. You know, he was able to dictate the range against Whittaker and against Paulo Costa. He was able to keep him on the outside and pick him apart. But Pereira, first of all, he's confident in his ability to take one of Izzy's shots. You know, he's taken several, and he got a standing count in their second fight, but he wasn't going to go down. You know, not like Izzy would have done with a couple more punches last night. He looks so confident moving into range, like I'm going to get to him eventually. And the idea of putting his back foot up against the fence so he's only got a few inches to slip back into, it makes him far more vulnerable to some shots. I'll show you a couple of bits in a little while, but yeah, exactly that for Izzy. Backed up against the fence, forced into a kickboxing range with a hard surface behind him and small gloves against one of the biggest punchers. It was a beautiful performance, though, wasn't it? Beautiful performance from both of them. I thought Izzy looked great as well. It was really nice to see both of them integrate some wrestling and some grappling. You know, there were moments where I thought to myself, did I just see a Glory champion do a nice double leg? And DC kind of laughed at it, but honestly, I thought it was a nice takedown. I mean, the timing was nice. He'd drive through, turn the corner. You know, we've got to start somewhere, haven't we? It's better than one of my takedowns, that's for certain. Okay, we got any questions yet, Jamie?
Quite a few, yeah.
Have we already? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of people talking about Dustin and Dariush.
Yes. That was mentioned at the press conference. It makes a lot of sense. The other reason why it makes sense, because the question that was posed to him before is, do you want to be an alternate in Perth for Makhachev Volkanovski? And he kind of, you could see he thought about it and he kind of went, that's a long flight. And cutting weight, they'd have to cut me a check. And then the Dariush question came after, and he was very complimentary of Beneil. You know, he talked about how he's earned his opportunity. It's kind of unfortunate that he's been, you know, pushed down again, because, you know, we do want to see him progress at some point. He's just not got that marketability. And the fact that Poirier has, A, validated him at the press conference as a legitimate, well-earned contender, and B, that it would be a fight that he'd be interested in. I think that's the fight to make. I've got a couple of other ideas for that card as well, based on the results of tonight. But first of all, fair play to Dustin Poirier. He's probably one of the smartest people in the sport right now. You know, the way that he's making moves with his hot sauce and... Yeah, I'm not sure what the situation with his hat was. Like, when he walked into the arena, he had a red hat that just said war across it in big white letters. And then when he was at the press conference, they'd put tape over it. I don't know what that was about, but anyway, interesting little observation. What else, Jamie? What else you got to tell me? I can kind of start rattling through the card if you want and just talking about some stuff, but if we've got a couple more questions, I'll...
Yeah, there's it's pretty loud. Yeah, there's quite a few questions coming through. A lot of them have been about Dustin and Dariush. There's one from John Jack talking about Erin Blanchfield. Do you think you could see her becoming champion one day?
I think she's definitely got the potential. I mean, it was a very dominant performance, and it wasn't like Molly wasn't ready. I mean, you know, by all accounts, she'd had a great camp and she was in a good place, and she's, you know, she was on a streak. She looked very strong. She looked very, very determined with the direction that she wanted to take the fight, and confident that she knew if she took the fight in that direction that she'd get the result that she wanted. I mean, you know, Molly's tough, incredibly tough. She stayed in that fight for as long as she could, fighting and thrashing and twisting out of that crucifix position. You know, forced Blanchfield to progress to a different position. But there was a point when she locked that kimura in, and you can kind of... Like, you can see Molly, she's like trying to like keep herself braced and her face is red, and you can kind of see her go, and you're like, oh no, she kind of knows that this might not be her night. But the good thing is, silver lining, she's set up for a big comeback in London in March, which, you know, that's going to be a real fanfare. They'll find someone that will give her a good scrap and that, you know, will be a fun fight. And she'll be back on her winning ways in no time. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, after two spinning knockouts in a row, there was no way I was picking against her, you know. But she Blanchfield's incredibly strong, tough, determined. It was interesting that she was treated like the outsider. I mean, it shows you how popular Molly McCann is, you know, and how likable she is, because the fans were chanting meatball. Yeah, she'll be back. It's just one of those things. It's sport. You know, we have ups and downs, and we keep moving forward. You know, I'd say the same about Poirier, who lost to Hooker. Hooker looked incredible. I thought he looked very, very good, very calm, very certain of what he needed to do. Good leg lock defense. surprised he spent as much time on the ground as he did. I thought he could have freed himself a bit earlier, but still, really good. And he has to be at this weight class. Like, the idea of 45 is just madness. Poyez still reminds me of the featherweight Charles Oliveira. There's something very Oliveira about him. Sometimes, like, the way that he's there, ready to fight, and then it just kind of doesn't go his way, and there's a little bit of a doubt that creeps in, and then he gets front kicked in the solar plexus and has had enough. Still keep an eye on him. I still feel like there's a bit of a resurgence in that kid, because he's got the ground skills quite clearly. Anybody that's winning consistently with knee bars has got some ground skills. You can just tell he has no confidence in his stand-up game. There's no substance to it whatsoever. And against someone like Dan Hooker, you're going to get eaten alive if you don't get the fight to the floor. I mean, he was very, very close with that knee bar. And, you know, if it was someone that didn't have the same kind of toughness as Dan Hooker, he might have got the tap in that one. It was a very, very a very dangerous situation for a moment. But, you know, he's still young, and Dan Hooker's in a very strong place. And I'm kind of jumping all over. Hooker was talking about fighting on the Perth card. Of course, he's got to be on the Perth card. Why not fight Moicano? Dan Hooker against Moicano. Moicano looked fantastic against Brad Riddell. Like, exactly what I expected out of him, to be honest. You know, Riddell's got a long stance. He stands kind of low. Moicano's kind of tall and a bit Muay Thai. It just makes for more flexible striking options, I would say. Like, Muay Thai is not about banging. It's not about cracking people really hard and you know, and trying to knock them out. It's about scoring points and damaging over time, working the legs, working the body. You know, there's a lot more of an emphasis on lower body techniques than there is upper body techniques in Muay Thai as well. The way that Brad Riddell fights, I feel like it puts power into his combinations because he's got such a long stance, but then there's a lack of mobility because once he's stepped in with a couple of shots, he's overextended and he kind of can't get himself back out. And Moicano's just so fluid with his striking. And that post-fight interview he gave was, I mean, that was perfect. That was just perfect. You know, he gave Rogan a shout-out, which means that it'll be worked into the Rogan podcast intro. Like, I think we've seen Moicano turn a corner. It's crazy to think he was a featherweight at one point. Very, very good fighter. Much better at 155 than he was. Same thing can be said for Hooker. Get both of those on the Perth card against one another. I think that would be a very, very interesting fight. Two tall, rangy strikers, one with more of a preference to strike than be on the floor, one with more of a preference to be on the floor than strike. Well, you know, the other thing as well that's crazy is that Moicano's not in the rankings. Like, I've refreshed it several times and looked through it several times thinking I'm missing his name, but I'm not. From 15 to the champion, Grant Dawson, Tony Ferguson, Conor McGregor, Dan Hooker, Demir Ismagulov, Jalen Turner, Armin Sarukian, Mateus Gamrot, RDA, Fiziev, Chandler, Dariush, Gaethje, Poirier, Oliveira, Makhachev. It's crazy that you're not in there. I feel like he should be. I mean, you know, Dan Hooker's at number 12. If you put Moicano against Hooker in there, you've got a very interesting fight for the guys sitting outside the top 10. God, he's got to have a ranking next to his name, especially after a performance like that. Okay, what else, Jamie? What else?
So we've got a couple of donations. Ooh. And a couple of questions.
I'm not taking any clothes off. I might take my hat off. Depends on the donation.
Yeah, first one was £5 from Mr. Nimbus.
That'll buy us some tea. Thank you.
So, I thought Pereira's wrestling looked so poor. I think any other top five is odds in favourite to beat him.
Yeah.
Am I crazy?
No, I don't think you are. I mean, I think, you know, it was kind of funny listening to the commentary. You know, we all love Rogan. Rogan was like a one-man hype show for Pereira. And then, like, as the fight was starting to progress, V and I were training while we were watching the hit. And as the fight was starting to progress and you could see Pereira slowing down a little bit, you started, like, Rogan was starting to go, well, he's not been tested against any of the top middleweights. You know, there's a lot of guys that could test him, his ground game and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, there are. Like, you know, there are, like, you look at the guys that are just below, it's not obviously not been updated yet, but you look at the guys that are in the top five. I mean, Vettori, Cannonier, Whitaker. I even think, you know, I mean, Gastelum's down at number 11. Andre Muniz, still keep my eye on him. I think he's going to be a real problem when he gets some momentum. Derek Brunson, number 5. I'm not, like, he's got a really ugly style of wrestler of striking, and you kind of feel like if Pereira can keep it on the feet, he's probably going to knock him out like Izzy did. But Derek Brunson's not going to play the same game. Most likely, he's going to set up his takedowns, and that's where we would see Pereira tested, really. Mom Vettori, I mean, Vittori's not the greatest wrestler. He's got good jiu-jitsu. He's got very kind of power-based grappling jiu-jitsu. If Vittori's trying to take Pereira down against the fence, Pereira may well be able to stuff his takedowns. He may well be able to stuff his takedowns. It's gonna be someone that's got more of a creative grappling game. That's why I think Derek Brunson, with his wrestling background, would be problematic. Even Jack Hermanson. You know, the way that Jack Hermanson gets people spinning and foot sweeping like he did against David Branch, and then he clamps onto that Joker team, and yeah, it's, you know, it makes things interesting for the division, of course, because now you've got a different guy at the top. Straight away, Chimaev called him out. You know, that, of course, would be an interesting fight, but I think Pereira would make Chimaev look really small. I think that would go the same, you know, if Chimaev was stood in front of someone like Jared Cannonier. You know, I mean, Vettori was a welterweight. Whitaker was a welterweight. Like, I think they're more comfortable fights, but I think Pereira is going to make everybody look quite small. He made Izzy look small. I thought, and they're both 6'4", same reach. I think Izzy's got an inch advantage. I don't know. I think there are tough tests for him in this division, but at the rate that he seems to be growing, and the fact that he's got Teixeira there, who for me has probably got the best foundational game in all of mixed martial arts. And let me clarify why I say that. Because, of course, there are people that have got better striking and better wrestling, better jiu-jitsu, just in amongst the ranking, the roster. But Glover Teixeira is an old man that's never looked particularly athletic compared to everybody else that he fights. He almost always gets hurt, and he still is able to come through against almost everybody on the planet. Like, that to me is an incredible attainment of martial arts ability. When it only takes the very, very best with their additional physical attributes that Trump has to be able to beat him. And then, you know, you take Pereira and you put him on the mats with Teixeira every day, and you allow Teixeira to just integrate his base game into Pereira, along with the power and the strength that Pereira's already got. He's already more of a physical athlete than Teixeira is. The way that he moves, the way that he hits, his physical strength, I would imagine, is, you know, exceeds whatever Teixeira can do. So he's just potentially going to be a better version. And now he's the champion. There's the opportunity for him to A, defend against Adesanya. See, that's the other thing as well. Losing to Adesanya would have put him back in that mix where he could have got a Derek Brunson or a Marvin Vettori or, you know, someone that could have caused him problems and then put a second loss on his record. But the fact that he did beat Adesanya means that he's bought himself another few months to be able to prepare for the rematch with Adesanya. Now he knows what he needs to do with the striking range against Adesanya. Adesanya came in and grappled. I would imagine that if Pereira fights Adesanya again, we'll see a very different game plan. I think we'll see him take Adesanya down and beat him up on the floor. And I think that will be an insight into the way that he's preparing his training for staying a champion. Just a thought. Any more questions, Jamie?
Yeah, so we've got another donation from Ron Moore.
Thank you, Ron.
And he asked, while watching Izzy, live, it seemed to me like he wasn't nearly as elusive and evasive as he normally is. Is he slipping a little bit?
I don't think he's slipping. I think he was put in a position where he's less comfortable. You know, I talked about it in the war room and on the breakdown show, where the range between Izzy and his opponents generally is a lot wider than it would be in a kickboxing arena. I think the fact that Pereira was so confident to stand so close to Izzy was what was making him uncomfortable. I think that's one of the reasons why Izzy decided to grapple, because if Izzy was cruising and stinging and winning the fight, I don't think he would have chosen to grapple. I think he would have conserved his energy and gone down the path that he's already more comfortable with and was working. The fact that Pereira was not able, he was not able to hold Pereira off, I think that's where the main problem is for Izzy, because he doesn't have the same kind of power that Pereira's got. So if he hits you with a jab or a cross or a check hook, yes, he can hurt you, but not with the same kind of consistency that Pereira can. And it's difficult to explain unless you've fought somebody that's got that kind of overwhelming power, or sparred against somebody. You know, sometimes they just feel like a tidal wave, like there's a brick wall and you're working against it and they're just not going back. I remember sparring a guy at Wild Card once, and he was terrifying. I remember being there warming up, getting my wraps on and jumping rope and getting prepared for sparring. I remember seeing this guy walking, terrifying looking dude. Like he had tribal scarring down his face, and he had hands like loaves of bread. And I thought to myself, when I'm done sparring, I'm going to stick around and watch who he spars, because they're going to get murdered. And 10 minutes later, I was climbing through the ropes and he was getting through the other side without even really warming up, just got in there and just decided he was going to beat someone up that day. And he just walked me down. And the boxing ring in Wild Card is, it's not the biggest of places. It can feel quite claustrophobic at the best of times. I couldn't hold him off. No matter what I hit him with, he wouldn't take a back step. And that's the same kind of feeling that you get with someone like Pereira. And it's not that he won't move back, that he won't give you a bit of space, but if he decides to take it away from you, he can. And that was evident with Izzy pretty much straight away for me. It was like he was like back foot up against the fence, standing square. Like they're just not good signs. They're just not good signs. And as we talked about in the war room, you don't have that slip ability over the top rope like you do in a boxing ring. And that's something else that saved Izzy a couple of times in their previous two fights, is that he was able to drift over the top rope. And there were some punches, I'll show you in a second what I'm talking about. There were some punches that were getting through that would have hit gloves if he was wearing the bigger gloves. Like, there is a big difference with what you're willing to withstand in big gloves and small gloves. Like, some people fight like they've got big gloves on. Even with small gloves, they stand in range, confident. Robbie Lawler, Mads Burnell, but it's a risk. You know, you can even get lumped up and cut just in the process of defending. Big gloves, you know, there's a lot of forgiveness there. But even so, you know, someone like Pereira's power. Scary, scary. How are we doing, Jamie? Shall I show people some bits? Do you want to see some bits, people? Do you want to see some bits? Not my bits, some bits. So. So, I told you last night was a good night. I want to quick show you Judo Jimmy Warled, because it was a beautiful knockout. It was so cool. I'll just play it through slow motion. So what you'll see is he's circling to this side, and he's constantly testing this side of Figlak. He's testing that backhand. Figlak's very dangerous. Very dangerous. So look at that lovely little roll. Roll and drift. Big right hand comes over the top because Jimmy's moving towards it. Slip and roll over the top. Goes for a check hook and lands a short right hand in the process. Figlak's going to give some space, and then he's going to throw a front kick, and then Jimmy's going to go wide slap hook, right hand down the pipe. Lizzie's hand coming around the side. Look, you can see how it's engaged the guard of Figlak. Bang. Oh, love it. Love it. Love it. And the thing is as well, Figlak's got a long and illustrious career ahead of him. This is one of those fights where it's just, you know, a bump in the road and we get back on track. For Jimmy to pick up the belt at this point in his career, is he 38? You know, he's had 470,000 fights. He's, you know, he's been put taken apart and put back together 16 times. I mean, he, you know, to see him pick up the belt at this point in his career was amazing. And we've also got a new gym opening, which first day's tomorrow. HW1 Fitness. Give us a follow on Instagram. Give us a follow on Instagram. HW1 Fitness. Check this out. There we go. You can see the long hook coming around the side, and you can see how it pulls Figlak's arm up to catch it. And it opens this channel right there for the right hand. Bang. Beautiful setup. And one that's very familiar to me. I've had my face tenderized by Jimmy for many years. Really nice performance. Maniac. Okay. Have we got any more questions, Jamie? Shout up if we've got a question, because I'll just rattle on otherwise.
Yeah, we've got a lot of questions coming through. So, from Moon.
Moon? The Moon?
In my opinion, any competent wrestler, grappler would just spam takedowns on Pereira and submit him.
Yeah, maybe, but we don't know. Like the guy that subbed him in his first fight, just like Pereira just wailed on him. Like it was. I remember feeling this same thing, because I had, I don't know, 15 or something kickboxing, Thai boxing matches, and then I made my MMA debut, and I remember putting an MMA glove on and thinking to myself, this is just going to be so different. It's going to be so much easier to hit people and to hurt them. And unfortunately, with that excitement and enthusiasm, you can kind of, just, that's what I did. I just wailed on my opponent because I thought I was going to catch him with something, and he was a smart, wily southpaw and he defended. And when it came to the end of the second round, I shot in and took him down, and he was a better grappler than me, and he choked me out. Look, it's almost exactly the same as what happened in Pereira's first MMA fight, and that's why I kind of look at it and go to myself, you know, I know that lesson because I've had it myself. I had that being a striker coming into mixed martial arts and thinking to myself, I'm going to murder you with these 4 ounce gloves on, and that's me. And The stars have to align perfectly, and I have to do a lot of work for the stars to align for me to get a knockout. Pereira does it accidentally in sparring over and over again, I'm sure. It's just who he is. So for him to put a pair of 4 ounce gloves on and look at the guy in front of him and think to himself, God, you'd be better fighting me in kickboxing so you had a bigger shield to hide behind. Like, I can imagine the process that he went through in his mind. And I also know how much that Rinicky choke and that memory of being tired and underneath somebody would have scared the shit out of him and would have forced him to move in the direction of bolstering his game against those things. My lessons for that from that first fight was, well, first of all, don't walk out to Pantera, because that don't work out very well for you. You turn into a psychopath. Second of all, don't throw everything you've got at your opponent in the immediate minute of the first fight, of the first round. Like, take your time. Like, these are lessons that I learned them in Taekwondo, then I had to learn them in kickboxing and Muay Thai, and then I had to learn them in MMA again. It's just the process. It's different. And if you don't learn the lesson from one when you move into the next, you have to learn it a second time. Like I said earlier, I think Pereira and Teixeira is a terrifying combination, because Glover Teixeira has got that really well thought out foundational mixed martial arts game that can work for a 40 something year old man that's been smacked in the side of the head and dropped. Like, if he can do it to Thiago Santos or, you know, whoever else, Yan, you know, like that information passed on to Pereira in a very kind of direct, this is what we're doing for MMA, I think he's going to be a real handful to take down and to hold down for anybody in the division. I think if you fought someone like Derek Brunson now, yes, I think you might be right. But I don't think Derek Brunson would be able to sub him. I think he'd take him down and beat him up, and I think he'd probably beat him by decision at this point. But Derek Brunson could also get his takedown stuffed. We might be underestimating Pereira's takedown defense. Like, the same thing goes for both. If Izzy was fighting Marvin Vettori, that takedown that Pereira got wouldn't have landed, because he would have been fighting Vettori. So he would have been like, okay, I'm backed up against the fence. Your options are, you're going to either hit me or take me down. If he's standing there with Alex Pereira in front of him, he's probably not even comprehending the fact that he might level change and put him on the floor. Like, the element of surprise is the reason why Izzy got taken down. You know what I mean? And Pereira is, you know, he showed how strong he was against Adesanya in the first couple of attempts to drag him to the mat. I don't know. I can't underestimate Pereira's ability to become a mixed martial artist very quickly. I feel like the fact that he's got Teixeira there is like a streamlined route to, you know, to basic MMA foundations. And that's, when you're a striker like he is, that's what you need. You know? What else?
So we've had a couple more donations. Another $10 from Ron Moore.
Thank you, Ron. My goodness, spoiling me.
Did you get a chance to see how Sean O'Malley went after the MMA guru for being fat, unhealthy, and jealous over the fence-grabbing accusation? Figured you'd get a kick out of that one. Lol.
I don't see, the thing is, I feel like there's a line in the internet, and I sit on one side of it, and other people sit on the other side, and this is where Sean O'Malley kind of blurs that line, because he kind of sits on both sides. He's on the TikTok side. I don't have a TikTok account. TikTok's the sound that the clock makes, and that's not the clock on your phone, because obviously that'd make a ticking noise. Like, when there was actually a clock on the wall in the room that ticked every second of the day. I remember the one at school. Tick, tick, tick. That's what TikTok is. Not some 15... why would you watch 15-second videos? It's madness. Anyway, what was the question? Yeah, I don't really have much of a comment on it. It's about as interesting as Power Slap to me.
There was a... Mr. Nimbus gave us another £5 donation for... Well, gave us such a detailed answer, felt like it was worth more. Also, shout out to my mate fighting this week, Hugh Jardin. Good luck against the stiff competition.
Oh, I'm not falling for one of these ones that get this thing. Come on. Hugh Jardin. Oh, come on. It. What's this? You got Jamie. It's like fucking Moe's Tavern in here. Jeez. Good work. Good work. Nice one, Mr. Nimbus. Nice one. Well done. Good luck. Good luck to your friend, Mr. Jardin. I'm sure the competition is stiff. Okay, where were we? Right. Shout up if you've got any more questions, Jamie. Because I'm gonna show you one of my favorite performances on the card. And the reason why I wanted to show it is because I would imagine you've watched the majority of the card, but you might not have watched the very first one. And of course, Izzy was topping the card against Pereira. Ullberg was opening the card. Same gym, same style of fighting. The way that Ullberg fought against Negomariano was poetic. It was just so, he got hit twice and they weren't even really hit. So, I mean, you know, he maybe scuffed his skin for a moment with a glove or a foot. It was a masterclass. And I want to draw your attention to this, Kai, because two things. One, he has the same style of striking as Izzy does. He has single punch knockout power with very little wind up, and he's a 205er, and I feel that division is wide open for someone like him to come and start causing issues in. Now, I know Ryan Spann's a bit further up on the card, and of course we're gonna hope that he progresses, but I would like to see Ullberg, you know, start to get some bigger opportunities, because I feel like he's got the ability. Like this fight against Negomariano was just super slick. He came out and worked the calf kick over and over again. You could see how Negomariano was starting to be quite timid on that lead foot, and then you could see him kind of lose his temper a little bit. He was kind of like, "Oh, you're circling, you're running away." Straight away, Ullberg's like, "All right, you see how he's like, yeah, okay, all right, dude, here what? Bang, toes in the midsection, love it. Little drift away again, just like Izzy does." Bouncing and juking from side to side. Little jab. Moves away. Lovely footwork. Little jab. Don't like that. Don't do that if you're a young fighter. Don't do that. But the rest of it's really nice. Like, I mean, just slick striking. Calm. Well measured. Look at this slip here when Negomariano winds up. I mean, that is just... This is the difference. This is what I'm talking about. The difference between MMA gloves and boxing gloves. It's like some Matrix stuff. Beautiful. Really nice performance. And then the finish, touches him with a jab, pulls him onto a check hook. That's some serious power. Negomariano can walk through big shots. We've got to keep an eye on this guy. Touch, ping. Oh. Bang, bang. Kind of reminds me of the check hook that Brendan Lochner knocked Chris Wade down with. Little. Do you want to see that? I've got it. I think I've got it in my iPad. I might show it in a minute. In fact, I'll show you now. No, damn it. I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, now what's happened? It's all gone to shit, Jamie. Here we go. Where are we? Here we go.
We've had a couple of more donations.
Have we? Yeah. Check. Here we go. Let me just find this. I knew I had it in my iPad. I was watching it the other day. Lovely little check hook that, isn't it? Boom. Super similar. Anyway, where were we? What we got, Jamie?
So, well, it's a little bit off the current fight, but
that's all right.
Great work, Dan. What do you make of Zhang's performance?
Yeah, I think she's next. In fact, she is. Look at that. That you've literally just set me up perfect for the next one. Look at that jab. Little loop over the lead hand. Oh dear. Lovely. Okay. Yeah, I think Zhang's next. Is Zhang next? I'm sure she is. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, awesome. Very, very impressive. As I always am with her, to be honest. I think she puts the work in. I think she's determined in her goals, and I think that it shows in her performances. You know, the big question is, can she beat Rose? You know, she got knocked out the first time. She lost a split decision the second time. But then, I don't know. I feel like she's going to be able to figure it out the next time around, especially if we get the Rose that came in against Esparza. Now, V made a good point. We were chatting about this. She said it on the podcast, actually, which a couple of people picked up on in the comments. They talked about the fact that the quote, I can't remember, I won't do it justice here. It was about the crown being too heavy for Rose. And I think that rings true. And then as we were watching the fights earlier today when we were training, she said, Rose in a rematch for the belt, absolutely. But Rose defending the belt, no. And I think that is exactly the picture of Rose Namajunas that I have. It makes perfect sense. Because I think with the pressure of the title, she kind of, I don't know. I feel like she could beat Zhang again because Zhang's the champion. I think if Rose was the champion and Zhang was coming in as the challenger, then Zhang's got a better chance of winning. But Rose coming in to get the belt back, she's just, I don't know, she's far more fiery. She's far more, like, she's not had that weight on her shoulders of being the champion. You're on the money, Veronica. You are right. Okay. So, first of all, takedown offense was really good. She's very physically strong, well-conditioned, managed range very well. You know, I was concerned that she was going to do what Yan Xiaonan did and go running into a power double and lose the first round straight away. She did make the mistake of throwing kicks, though, and getting the court. And that's something that Yan Xiaonan did, but she wasn't able to get back to her feet. Whereas Zhang Weili, although her kicks were caught, she was able to reverse position or defend the takedown. This is the whole sequence here. Like, this was a really nice takedown defended against someone who's got great wrestling. And that's a really deep bite as well. And this comes off, Zhang Weili throws a kick, and then once she's landed, Carla Esparza shoots straight in before she's reset herself. So Carla gets, she's got contact with her shoulder there, she's got contact on the leg and contact on the leg, and she's got a good drive that she's moving through. Now you can see the way that Zhang Weili's kind of twisted her body off to one side. So she's not directly in front, hang on a minute, let me see if I can get my angles right. She's not there being driven in that direction, because then it'd be very difficult for her to stop that takedown. She's got one hip that's hit hard into Carla Esparza, and she's got this overhook here. So she's got something that she can start moving away. You can also see she's going to start pushing down with her right hand on the back of Esparza's head as she moves away. There it is, look. So she's pushing down. Now Esparza's still driving here. But you can see the fact that she's going past Weili. Like, look at the position of the legs. Like, Carla Esparza is moving past Zhang Weili. Zhang Weili's on the side. She's slowing her down with this, and she's driving down into the back of her head. If it wasn't for this hand here, Zhang Weili would have been able to sprawl out. That's the main key, the reason why she does end up on the floor for a moment. Because Esparza is able to keep this control on this leg. But what's brilliant about the way that Zhang plays this is she's going from pushing down on the back of the head to posting out on the canvas over here. Post. You'll also see that she's got this whizzer, this overhook here, which gives her something to pry against, something to drive into her opponent's body with. And as she does it, she's going to hip heist out. Look at that. The reason she's able to do that is because she's driving into Carla Esparza here. It gives her something to remove this leg, push against. And it slows Carla Esparza down. Now, the next bit is also very important as well, because what you'll notice is that Carla Esparza is trying to step her leg over here. If she's able to get her right leg over there, she's able to control this leg of Zhang. And that, again, will allow her to sit her on the floor for a moment, slow her down. But what you'll notice is as Zhang starts to turn, watch the direction that she turns her knee. It's such a minor detail, but it shows you supreme awareness in that position. The knees go in the opposite direction, so even though Esparza gets a bite on that foot, it slides out and she ends up back in a sprawl position. Hook. Slides out, and then she's back around the front. Pressure's down, back on the head again. Such lovely takedown offense. Really, really impressive. And then this sequence here, you can see Carla's kind of panicking and scrambling now because she can feel this pressure down on the back of her head. So as she then reaches through with this arm to try and grab this leg, Zhang Weili's behind her because she removes that frame. Lovely work. Bang, and now she's chasing this leg, and Zhang Weili's already behind her. And lovely work controlling the arm as well by Zhang Weili. Here we go, better angle. There we go. So she's got control of this arm here. She's hooked over that. She's going to secure that with her other leg. And then she's around the neck and around the shoulder. And of course, this is an unusual position to get a submission in. But people are finding different ways of using leverage. This reminds me a little bit. In fact, it reminds me a little bit. It's quite different in a lot of ways. Gordon Ryan's rear naked choke over Andre Galvao. Like, you could see that the pressure across the front of the neck, it wasn't around the neck. It wasn't a full noose strangulation. It wasn't fully constricted. It was across the front. And that to me looks like the thing that's causing Esparza the most pain here is that it's that forearm into the front of her esophagus, And what you'll also notice is that Zhang Weili's hooked over this shoulder. So she's driving with this into the neck of Esparza. And because she's got her leg and her arm controlled as well, Esparza's kind of stuck in this position, back against Zhang Weili's body with this arm across her neck. And then what you'll notice, what you'll see is that Zhang Weili's going to pull that arm down. She's going to get her arm free, and then she's going to go full rear naked choke. As soon as she feels like she can get, she's like, she's adjusting. She's driving down onto this shoulder here to put pressure into the neck of Esparza. Very interesting position. Where are we? There we go. Removes and then goes straight across. And Esparza's just kind of tangled up here with her arm. I mean, I think it was already kind of halfway done before she even got the figure four with her arms, to be honest. I think Esparza had kind of had enough. She didn't seem too disappointed either, I'll be honest. I understand, of course, you know, she loved being the champion and she wanted to be the champion, but I also think she looks at this division and thinks to herself, there's some horrible matchups in here. And Weili was always going to be that kind of fight for her, I think. Yeah, any more questions, Jamie?
Yeah, we've had quite a few come through. So I had one from Turd Ferguson. Good name. How do you think Rob matches up against Pereira?
I don't know. I don't know as I'm confident in Rob's wrestling at this point. Like, Rob's a bit bigger than me. Like, he's filled out as a middleweight, but he's 6'1" ish. You know, he was a welterweight. I feel like Pereira would look massive, and I feel like even if Rob has got a technical wrestling advantage, the effort that it would take to put Pereira on the floor and to keep him there and to have to probably do it after the first round and the second round and the third round if he was going to win. I don't know. That's why I feel like someone like Brunson would make more sense. Like, Rob was uncomfortable against Izzy. He struggled with the range against Izzy. Now, of course, Pereira is most likely going to get closer to Rob and that would make it easier for Rob to hit him. But it's also not going to give Rob the space and the range that he likes to leap in with that check rolling hook or that snapping head kick. They're also not techniques that he's going to land easily on Pereira, which means that he's most likely going to have to grapple, and the pressure of, shit, I have to grapple, often throws the technique out the window. It becomes scrambly and chaotic. Like Derek Brunson did, honestly, against Izzy, when he realized that he couldn't take him down, he ran onto that knee. Like, that was set up perfectly. And this is just based on, I've not done any immediate research into this or anything with Rob, but I don't feel like I have the confidence in his wrestling and in his physicality to be able to take Pereira down. I think Pereira against Yoel Romero would have been an absolute banger. Can you imagine that? Although Yoel Romero wouldn't have wrestled, he'd have just stood there and traded shots with him. When your neck doesn't twist, you're not worried about getting knocked out too much, are you? Yeah, I don't know. Yes, like Twisted Media. Like, if Izzy can take him down, then Rob can maul him. But I feel like the element of surprise was a big part of the reason why both of these guys were taken down. I don't know. I'm just speaking on my initial first thoughts on it. I don't know if I can see Rob being able to take him down. Not consistently, anyway. Ron Moore, thank you, my friend. Miss seeing me in the UFC booth. Do not worry. I have a lovely new announcement for you all coming soon, which I can't say right now because the contract isn't signed, but something big's coming. Trust me. I'm very excited. Okay, shall I continue? We've got more questions, Jamie?
There was one come through just from Science Now. How does Poirier match up against Fiziev? What's next for Fiziev?
Yeah, that would be a good fight, wouldn't it? I feel like we need a separation in these divisions, because I don't really know as I want to see Fazeev fight in Poirier. They're like the new school guys, and like Poirier Chandler was brilliant because you've got two veterans that are gonna throw down. But I don't know. I think Fazeev would be an absolute nightmare for Poirier on the feet, honestly, just because of his speed and his the depth of his striking skills. You know, he's also going to look at Poirier's fighting style that's been very consistent over the years, the way that he steps through into range, as I talked about in the war room. Like using that catch-all shift to step through requires a lot of him landing heavily on his front foot. And that's the kind of thing that Fazeev moves and chops and moves and chops. And he doesn't get caught up against the fence very easily, where Poirier's broadside unloading power shots. The smart thing, obviously, would be for Poirier to try and take him down. But again, you know, I think that would be a difficult thing to do. Like, there's a lot of good guys in this division that, I don't know, if I'm Poirier, Gaethje, Chandler, I'm kind of thinking to myself, give me some super fights. Give me some big fights. Like, Chandler against McGregor makes a lot of sense. Like, Poirier, as he said in the post-fight in the press conference interview, what he said to Chandler was that he was scared to fight him. He got that adrenaline rush when he signed the contract. That's what he's looking for right now. And I think that there are some guys, of course, that are going to give him that. I mean, like, even like standing in front of Jalen Turner, he's going to make Dustin Poirier feel like, my goodness, I should maybe think about retiring, because these lightweights are getting bigger and more difficult to deal with. But then, you know, you've got Sarukian and Gamrot as well as Fazeev in there. You know, I feel like Dariush is kind of between the two. He's not had his opportunities to be a great in the lightweight division yet, but he's kind of that generation. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe he's the one that bridges the gap. Yeah. Good question, though. I don't know. I've not actually thought about Fazeev against Poirier before. Could be a good one. What else you got, Jamie? Shall I carry on showing people some bits?
There's this one question he's asked. Lower Alordi. He's asked it a couple of times now. Yeah. Regarding Izzy. Should Izzy step up the wrestling and grappling aspect for the rematch, or try to develop that left hand for when he switches stances, because unorthodox made Alex uncomfortable, in my opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think investing in grappling and wrestling is always going to be smart for Izzy to do, just so he doesn't feel trapped. And I think, you know, having some wrestling and grappling in the fight that we saw against Alex did alleviate some of the pressure that he was feeling early on. Because although obviously he finished that first round very strong with that hook, it did feel to me like it was inevitable in the striking range that Alex was going to be able to get to him, just because of the way he was able to close him down and range and force him into a small space up against the fence. Now, Izzy's got very good lateral movement, and in an octagon, like, of course, the angles are 135 degrees, so you've got more space to kind of bounce and juke out, like we saw with Carlos Ulberg, like that nice side-to-side movement. You can't really do it in a boxing ring. It's easy to get wedged into a corner. And when you're skirting along the ropes, you've got to anticipate that at some point you're going to hit a wall, literally a wall, and then you've got to go that way or back the direction that you came, or through your opponent. It's much easier for Izzy to deal with Alex when he's got space, and that's when he can be his most fluid and unorthodox. You know, like, you watch the way that he commanded space against Paulo Costa, and the reason I use that is because it was such an obvious, this is the level that you're not at, Paulo Costa, when it comes to striking. And you could see the confidence that Izzy had from that, and the lack of confidence that Paulo Costa had. Like, I can't get to him. He keeps hitting me. I can't get to him. That's the range that Izzy loves, and that's the range that if he'd had that against Alex, I think he would have had a lot more success, but he just didn't have the option. I mean, if I was stepping in to coach Izzy against Alex the next time around, I would be thinking about my elbow game. Because there was one elbow that came close to hitting Alex, but he didn't throw it as a smash. He threw it as a slice. It was breaking off the fence in the clinch. don't remember which round it was. I feel like it was the third. But he kind of, he went, and it went across Alex's face instead of into it. And sometimes you gotta smash. And I think that if you're against someone that overpowers you physically, you've got to have something that can do damage in other ways. Izzy can hit Alex and hurt him. We saw that with the left hook that he landed at the end of the first round. But to know that he's going to do damage and to potentially open him up a little bit and make him bleed going into the later rounds, which is always good for five round fights, I think Izzy could really do well to add some close range elbows to his game, because he either seems to go from striking at range to grappling. Like, we see some close range knees, but yeah, we just don't see many elbows from him. And I think that, you just look what Angela Hill was able to do with elbows when she added them to her game. You know, she was not known as a power striker, but she is a striker by trade. And then she adds elbows to her game, and all of a sudden she's doing damage to people. Like, remember what John Jones did with elbows. Remember what John Jones did with elbows to Glover Teixeira. There you go. There's a little circle for you. I'd be thinking that. I'd be thinking of, because the other thing as well with Alex is he's very kind of reactive with his hands. Like, I feel like if Izzy had had a bit more confidence and a bit more space, he would have been able to find his way around those hands. It was odd. It was like, he reaches a lot for stuff, but then when he closes range down, he's got such a big frame, and those hands and forearms fill so much space that it's kind of difficult to get around them. Yeah, I don't know. Let me show you bits. Give it a shout out if we've got a question, Jamie. Okay, let me show you this. So, first thing that Izzy talked about, the main damage that Alex did to him that was a game changer for him was the calf kick. And he talks about it taking away his footwork and his movement, and that is potentially something that we should consider if they're going in for a rematch. The first thing that Izzy's going to be thinking is, I don't want to be available for that calf kick. It might force him to fight southpaw a little more, just as a thought, because Pereira is almost always orthodox. We see him step through a little bit to strike, but he always returns to orthodox. So Adesanya standing orthodox leaves this lead leg on for him. If he switches to southpaw, it makes it more difficult to get to that leg. Like, you can do it, you know. I remember Poirier doing it to Cub Swanson, like kind of stepping around and stinging the outside of the leg. But it is difficult to do against a southpaw, and it does leave you more on the center line as well. The calf kick here, I mean, he does kind of leave himself on the center line, but also Izzy tries to check it, because I think he was expecting it to go a bit higher. Nice work on the calf kick, and it just seemed to me like Izzy's footwork was affected by it almost immediately. And then the other thing as well is Alex did a really good job of closing Izzy's kicking range down with his own kicks. Like, if you remember the war room I was talking about, Izzy and Rob and the distance between the two of them, look at the distance between their hips here. Ooh, that was a terrible line. I would say that Rob was probably, ooh, not on Mark Goddard's feet. I would say he was probably over here. I would say there was at least another foot and a half for Izzy to play with. And Izzy did look uncomfortable in these ranges. And Alex is clearly going to be a power kicker as well. You can see how he kind of twists it out so he doesn't get it caught. But he just kept walking Izzy down. And you can see what he was doing. We saw this against, in his LFA fight, Powell. I think it was Powell. What he does is he'll throw this kick around the side here to force Izzy to move in this direction, and then the hook will come around and intercept. Like, he's squeezing Izzy in the direction of his power shot. It's like, go this way, move towards my power shot. Especially with Izzy being southpaw, it leaves the body open for that kick here. And again, Izzy tries to catch it, but look how Alex twists it. It turns, and then he twists his knee to the ceiling. Just a little thing I've noticed. Twists his knee to the ceiling to pull it back, and he's still pressuring. See, and look where Izzy is backed up against the fence here. I mean, that could have been the end of the fight right there. If that was maybe an inch or two further forward, But look what I was talking about. Like, Izzy is literally up against the fence there. Like, there is nowhere else to go. He can't lean over the top rope here. And when I started seeing Alex like closing Izzy down, and when I started seeing Alex close Izzy down, I started thinking to myself, this is going to get very uncomfortable for Izzy, and he's going to feel flustered, which is going to make his heart rate climb, which is going to make him tired faster. This is the end of the first round, which was, you know, nothing wrong with it at all. I expected a few more people to complain about it, to be honest, because they did when Durandamy was doing it to Holly Holm. But I'll say it anyway. The bell and the 10-second clapper is for the referee. It's not for the fighters. Izzy's thinking solely about his opponent here. He shouldn't have to be thinking about listening out for a bell. It's not his responsibility to stop this fight. Stop the fight. It's the referee's responsibility. And Goddard did a good job of getting in, but you can't... There's no blame on Izzy's part. They talked about it a bit in commentary. They were like, well, it was kind of after the bell a little bit. Was it after the bell? You know. Crack on. Drag me off them when the bell goes. Oh. It's just such a slick little adjustment that he makes. Because clearly he lands clean with the right hand. Right? Lands clean with the right hand. Lands kind of around here. Knocks Alex off balance for a moment. But as he recovers, he comes back to look at Izzy. Like, he's back. He's not fully there. He's rocked, he's hurt, but he's back in a position ready to deal with whatever comes next, or try his best to deal with whatever comes next. Now, the reason I'm showing you this is because when you see the replay, and Izzy just, he didn't stop the fight. He didn't, what was I going to say? He mentioned this briefly in the post-fight interview. He wasn't happy with the way that this left hook landed. And as he said, you know, give me 3-4 more seconds and I would have landed it. He set this up perfectly. It was really, really nice the way he did it. Now this, well, let's just play it through. I'll play it through slow. And then you can see the replay and you'll see what I'm talking about. So, jab, cross, hook. Okay, watch the replay. Watch what Izzy does with his right hand before, watch what Izzy does with his right hand before he throws his left hook. So you can see it kind of lands on the ear, lands like on the ear side of the head. Like, that's the kind of thing that it sends your equilibrium off. It sends your balance off and you feel like you're... I liken it to kind of feeling like your head's full of water, or you're like you're underwater. You're a little bit kind of not exactly sure what where up is. So he's disorientated, but he's not unconscious. We know this, right? So he turns and he looks back. He knows where he is. Because he turns his face back towards him. But what he sees is this hand over here. Because that's what Izzy's posturing. He's not showing a left hook right now. He's posturing like he's going to throw this back hand again. Watch what Pereira does with his back hand. See how Izzy postures an uppercut? And it opens him up for the hook. That's what Izzy was talking about by not landing the hook as well as he wanted to. Because it doesn't properly land on the chin. It lands kind of into his neck. Now, look at the position that Izzy's in right now. We've seen this before with Whittaker and Costa. His drift away hook is really nice. But maybe what he didn't do was make the adjustment for a Pereira being 6'4" instead of 6'1", 6'2". I feel like if this punch was... If Pereira maybe wasn't quite as high on his toes... Or if Adesanya had leaned back just a little bit more, he'd have raised the trajectory of that hook and he would have landed here instead of here. And I think that's what he means by not happy with how the hook landed. But what was beautiful about it is that he set it up. Let me play it through slow motion. Watch his back hand. He goes, bam! And Pereira bites on it by bringing his hand down to meet it. Posture, hook. Could have knocked him out. Could have knocked him out with that. In a different day. Inch higher. 2 seconds more. That's the way it goes. He does have a habit of catching people right on the bell, though, doesn't he? He did it to Whittaker in their first fight. Dum dum. Dropped him. Came out the second round and almost replicated the same thing, but it's that drift away hook. Anyway, look at the space between the two of them. Look how close they are. Look how little Izzy's got to move with. He doesn't have the back step or the switch to southpaw, which he likes to use. He doesn't have all that drifting shit that he can do because he's squeezed up against the fence. It's like, ugh, like, stay away from me. Doesn't have enough power to do anything to hold him off. Or at least we didn't think so. But again, I'll make the same argument because in the moment where Adesanya had caught him, he'd hurt him with a cross. But he's still out in range. He's still got space. This is where Izzy likes to work. Like space behind him. As soon as Pereira came out the next round, it was like, right, I'm right in front of you. I'm gonna stay on you and I'm gonna keep you as square to the fence as I can. Because it nullifies a lot of what Izzy do. It does. It forces him to do this kind of stuff where he's ducking and sliding and moving. But look how quickly Pereira puts him back under pressure. And it's always Izzy's always focused on this lead hand. It's always about trying to circle him onto this left hook. This is why he keeps posturing with the back leg. There, look, you can see him. Postures it as if he's going to show Izzy because he doesn't want Izzy to move in this direction. If he moves towards his right, he's got to circle out and reset and try and force him back towards the left. Or he's got to circle out and put him on the end of a kick to move him back towards his left. Like you can see, he shows the left leg. Always covering, making sure that he can't squeeze out that direction so he's there for the hook. Here we go. Here's the finish. So here we are in the fifth round. Same thing again. Look how close he is. Stays on him. Doesn't give him the space. And the angle that left hook comes through. Look how close they are here. Nowhere for Izzy to go. Backs up against the fence. Head touches the crossbar as he gets hit with that. And you can see his eyes are, he's not quite sure where he is here. I will say something. Izzy takes a hell of a shot. He takes a hell of a shot. But this, you know, Pereira, with the speech that he got from his corner team at the end of the fourth round, knowing full well that he's got Izzy on the back foot and that he can win a title here and that he's already put him away, like Izzy's like back on his feet, trying to fight here. But he's taking lots of close range shots here, even ones that are just kind of scuffing the sides of his head. You can still see they're twisting his head. Like, there's a natural power that Pereira's got that makes him incredibly difficult to deal with, even at close range when he's not landing cleanly. Like, look how he comes straight up the center line with that. Beautiful technique. There's the hook again. Look how close he is. It's just not the range that Izzy can be fighting at. Yeah, look at that little hook there as well. I mean, again, you know, like these are the shots that it's quite easy to miss these shots when you're watching the fight full speed. This is why I like to watch it through a few times and get the different angles. Like this uppercut lands right on Izzy's forehead, lifts his chin up, and then the hook comes right across his chin as he's closing into range. Uppercut, hook. Scary dude. Another little hook right in the temple. Super short, but just lethal. And again, side of the head. Lots of clean shots. It's amazing Izzy didn't go down. I mean, I know he kind of lost his feet and stumbled, but he was straight back to his feet. His willingness to continue is impressive. Another big shot. Missed that one. Another shot. Catch him across the top of the head. Doesn't look like much, but what you'll notice is that it moves the top of his head towards his shoulder. It's doing the same thing as most of these shots. It's shaking his brain. It's shaking his head. Like, and of course he's... I had no problem with that. I don't think anybody else had. I'll be honest, though. I think if Izzy had made a big deal out of it, it could have become more of a thing. I appreciate him just kind of look at that. Look how it came around the side of his glove. This is where those 4-ounce gloves don't really help Izzy too much. Backed up against the fence without a big shield to hide behind. I've got one more clip for you, but it's from their first fight. And the reason I want to show you this is because it's the same thing we talked about in the war room. Izzy takes a big right hand, but goes over the top rope and then takes another left hook. And he takes this really well. But it's the forgiveness that he has from the fact that he can move away and move over the top rope, and the fact that there's some forgiveness because these big gloves. Like, look, as this is coming up here, Izzy doesn't get a full guard to it. He doesn't get a full glove to it. But even that little bit of contact with the glove there is going to make some difference. Changes the trajectory of the punch a little bit. It's only a minor thing, but big gloves do make a difference. He took that shot really well. I mean, I think that was the story of it, wasn't it? It was don't get backed up against the fence. Because if he finds himself there against Pereira, especially in a rematch, there's no reason why you can't expect Pereira to level change now, which makes it even more difficult to decide what he wants to defend. Like, if you take someone like Pereira and you can't move towards your left because you're going to walk onto his power right kick, and you can't move towards your right because you're going to walk onto his left hook, but you can't stand still against the fence because he's going to hit you with his jab and level change. What choices is he got there? This is why I feel like tie clinch, like a knees up the center line, I don't even think he's going to be able to have as much of an effect on that. I'd be thinking single necktie and smash, or meeting him with elbows as he's coming in, because Pereira is quite open and elbows are very sharp. Yeah. I've got to read that one. Bayuk. Emerson Bayuk. How hard did Veronica roll her eyes when Dustin Poirier got the third round submission? Did I say Dustin Poirier was going to win by submission in the third round? I don't remember. As Dr. John says, I forgot. Any more questions, Jamie? Anything stood out to you?
Yeah, so obviously a few people mentioned the stoppage in the Izzy Pereira fight, and just wanted to get your thoughts on whether it was early or not. I don't know.
The thing is, if you speak to Mark Goddard, he'll tell you I'm a sociopath. So I don't know as my opinion over Mark Goddard's is a good thing necessarily. I would have liked to have seen him. That sounds bad. I wouldn't have liked to have seen him go down. I would have liked to have seen a harder conclusion for a title fight. But the thing is, I don't want to go over old ground. But Covington was dropped twice before that fight was stopped, and he made a big deal about the stoppage. If Izzy had have been at the press conference going, that was bullshit. I mean, he did say, let's bring Steve Mazzagatti back. But of course he's joking, because Mazzagatti's known for not pulling the trigger quick enough. He's a bit herbish in that way. The thing is, I could see from the first couple of shots that Izzy was kind of dazed. You could see his eyes were out of it. The moment when it was stopped, he was slumped over looking at the floor. It probably wouldn't have taken more than two punches to really finish him. And now the question becomes, does the champion deserve that extra couple of shots to try and recover, especially if he was winning the fight? Or is it the referee's job to protect that fighter when they can't defend themselves as effectively as they could previously in the fight? It's one of the many debates in mixed martial arts. It's one of the many debates. I didn't have a problem with the stoppage necessarily. I think if I was Izzy, I would have wanted to have been put away. And I think if I was trying to win the belt, I would have wanted to put them away as well. Just because you don't want anybody at the press conference to be able to say anything like, oh well, if this hadn't happened. Like, I think Izzy was quite complimentary of Pereira. You know, he talked about him hitting the calf kick consistently and doing good damage to that, investing well. I don't know. You tell me what you think. What do you think? Would you have? Risk to reward, right? Is there a benefit in Izzy taking two more punches? And was there a possibility that he was going to kind of turn it around in some way? I don't think he was turning it around. I think he was out of the fight. I think he was out of the fight, even though he was still standing. But I wouldn't have been angry at two more punches. Let me put it that way. I wouldn't have been yelling, stop the fight, if it had landed two more punches. If it had hit the floor and he'd have carried on, then, you know, absolutely, because he'd taken enough punches on the feet already. But, yeah, I don't know. But, my perspective is that of a fighter, and I would always rather be carried out, because I'm there to... That's the nature of the sport. And, of course, it's different now as well. It's different. Like, my perspectives on things are different from the outside looking in, watching other people do it, of course. I think when you're doing combat sports, and this might not be the same, not be the same for everybody, but there's a certain mental savagery that's important for me to attain before I step in there. When I'm stepping in to compete, I'm doing things like returning any books, or back in the DVDs and CDs days, I would return shit that I'd borrowed from people. I would pay off any debts, anything I owed anybody. If I borrowed a few quid for this and that, I'd make sure those people, everything was squared away. Because it's like, I don't know. It's kind of like that process for me was a part of being ready for the fight, because I didn't want to be stepping in there thinking, oh shit, on Monday I need to pay such and such back, or I forgot to give his book back. I can't be in that mindset when I'm stepping into the cage. It's like, okay, I'm here for, if it's a main event title fight, I'm here for 25 minutes or less, and I'm not thinking of anything past that point. So that kind of level of mental savagery, it gives me a different perspective on what I would want the outcome of my fights to be. Because, of course, I want fighters to be protected, and I want Izzy to come back and fight again and be well and healthy into old age, as I do for everybody in mixed martial arts. But we also understand the risks that we're playing, and I don't know. I would rather have at least been on my knees on my way out if I was the champion. I think, yeah. I don't know. But that's why I'm not a referee. It's a hard job. Okay, any more questions, Jamie? I feel like there's a couple of things I haven't talked about. What did I say? Oh, Ryan Spann. Ryan Spann looked really good. Really good. Who does he fight next? Nikita Krylov? He's at number 8. Does he rematch Smith? Does he rematch Johnny Walker? I feel like Ryan Spann's set to be progressed. I think he's ready to be progressed. I think he's a very... I won't mind seeing Ryan Spann against Carlos Ullberg. It might be a bit early for Ullberg, but the rankings are anyway, so kind of do what you like. Chris Gutierrez looked incredibly good, and I felt very sorry for him to have to do that to Frankie Edgar in his retirement fight, because we all love Frankie. We all love Frankie. And I thought he was an absolute pro in there. You know, he's given us so many fights. I was at a lot of his fights live, and I feel very thankful to have been at them too. The Gray Maynard fights, holy shit! Like it was like being on a roller coaster with 20,000 people. They were wild fights. Frankie Edgar's delivered some of the most amazing performances. There is no forgiveness in mixed martial arts, as DC said. There are no fairy tales. Although DC did walk away as the champ, so he's maybe hacked the system. Unfortunately, Frankie was always going to go out like that, because that's what he does. He's a fighter. You know, you're going to have to put him away 3 or 4 times to convince him that it's not time to come back. It would have been nice to see him pick up a win, not at the expense of Chris Gutierrez in any way. I have nothing against him, but to see him go out on a win. And, you know, it's the same with Brad Pickett in London against Chito Vera. And he had 2 really good rounds and then got bingoed with that head kick. And I'm a big fan of Cheeto. I like his fighting style. But you kind of, in that moment, you want to see the fairy tale ending for Pickett. And you kind of did for Edgar as well. You know, that's why as soon as the fight was over, Gutierrez was in tears and the crowd was shouting Edgar. You know, it's that's when you've truly achieved something. Is when you can get knocked out in the first round in your retirement fight and the people chant your name on the way out. I guess this is a little bit of a thank you to Frankie Edgar. I might look at a couple of his old fights for archive at some point soon because he's had some absolute bangers. Absolute bangers. Yeah. What else? Alex Pereira walking out to Sepultura. But you didn't notice that, did you, Jamie? There you go. And Adesanya's coat at the press conference. What the fuck was that about? Like, I felt like he'd like hunted down Sasquatch for his outfit. I don't know what the deal is. Luke Rockhold was wearing his pet dog the other day as well when he was walking into the arena. Celebrities need to get over this fascination with wearing fucking fur. It just looks gross. Like, he's sitting there looking like, I don't know. Like, you literally, like, you could have put the Bigfoot and the Henderson's helmet onto him and he would have just looked like he was in character. I don't fucking get it. I don't get it. Anyway, more questions, Jamie? Are we all wrapped? Is everybody all asked out?
I did put a Adesanya versus Pereira rematch poll out.
Oh, yeah? What are people saying?
So 58% of people have gone with Pereira in the rematch.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because like, I kind of like watching that. I think to myself, well, how would the next fight be? I was even thinking about this because it's inevitable that we're going to get a second fight. So it's inevitable that I'll do a breakdown on it. And I was thinking to myself, I don't think I'm like, if you saw my BT Sport breakdown show, you'll know what I mean. Because I kind of went through loads of footage. I went through some of Alex's old fights and the kickboxing matches with Izzy and stuff, and then in the archives I broke those fights down individually, and I did the same thing in the war room. But if they fought again, I would literally just watch and break down their last fight. I don't think we need to know anything else other than what we saw in that fight, because then from that we can then speculate which direction they're going to have taken their training. We can look at some old training footage. I did notice that that Pereira came out with that flying teep, and he did that on the was it Embedded or the Countdown show. There was a clip of him training in the gym with MMA sparring gloves on, and he went flying at the guy front kick. You've got to give away your game plan, Pereira. You've got to be careful. Did we have another donation, or is that from a while ago? The Surfer Dude 1984. What do you think of the Hooker fight? Glad to see him get the win. Yeah, really glad to see him get the win. Really glad. I honestly felt like Hooker has been in a bit of a bad spot, and I felt like Poyez might do what he almost did in the first round. I think V and I even talked about it on the podcast. Imanari roll into a leg attack. I thought Hooker looked good. I thought he looked solid. I thought he looked calm on the floor in positions where I would have been panicking for my ACL. I think the next fight for Hooker, in my opinion, would be Moicano in Perth. Like, if I could matchmake, that'd be the one I'd do. I'd put Moicano against Hooker in Perth, and you could put it up, you know, Coco main event if Poirier against Beneil Dariush is there. So you got what we got: Makhachev, Volk, Dariush, Poirier. Then we can have. What was I just talking about? My brain's gone. You're texting. Here we go. And then Hooker Moicano, Coco main event. There we go. And then put Taito Avassa on there because he always gets the crowd going. I was impressed with him. I'm excited to see what comes next for him. Thanks for your question. Manga Madness. What's your opinion on Bo Nickel and the rest of the All-Americans joining MMA? Do you feel like they'll be able to defeat the Russians in wrestling? I don't know. I think there's a lot of weight given to this style against this style. Oh, well, you know, All-American wrestling against the Dagestani style of wrestling. Or, well, you know, is it judo against Sambo? And kind of feel like we learned these lessons in the early days of mixed martial arts. Like, ultimately, it's not about the system that someone has. It's about how they employ that system. Like, there are a lot of people that are well-versed in the collegiate and all-American style of wrestling, freestyle wrestling. It doesn't mean that they all exhibit the same ability to put it on their opponent, though, you know? Just like the lessons that are available to Khabib Nurmagomedov are available to Abubakar Nurmagomedov, but you don't see him being as dominant. You know, just because a person makes a style work very well, it doesn't mean that that style is now dominant over other styles. It's just, you know, it can go back and forth constantly, and I feel like Bo Nickel first of all, he's a very, very exciting prospect, very talented. A lot of people talking very highly about him. And that's the thing, when the word gets around within the gyms, when people are talking to other people about them without media being there, that's when it becomes interesting. And people were doing it about Chimaev before he made his UFC debut as well. There was the conversation about, oh yeah, wait till you see this guy. I think he'll go a long way. But I think it's about how he employs his wrestling and who he comes up against, because there are always going to be people that can throw a problem in your direction. Yeah, I hope that's answered your questions. I mean, there were so many good collegiate wrestlers that came through and joined MMA. There was like that Team Takedown back in the day when I was training at Legends. There was a group of guys that had been recruited, Jared Rosholt and a bunch of them, really strong wrestlers, but the vast majority just didn't. I think Chaz Skelly was one as well, if I remember right. Some of them just don't transition through to mixed martial arts as well. Yeah. Any more questions, Jamie? Thoughts on Yair versus Emmett for the interim? I'm excited for it. I think my concern with Emmett is I feel like he's a bag of broken bones. Like, that's the kind of story I always get about Josh Emmett, is that if he wasn't so injured, he would be active and deadly against everybody. And I don't know whether Yair is a little bit too chaotic to be dealing with someone like Emmett, because I feel like Emmett's got a good foundational game. He's very well conditioned. He hits very hard. I feel like he's going to be able to work that lead leg of Yair Rodriguez and smother some of his movement. And as long as he doesn't get caught with something wild, he might be able to just shut Yair Rodriguez down. And that sometimes Rodriguez's emotions come through too much in fights, and it makes him reckless. And that can be very fun to watch, but it can also make him very vulnerable to certain things. And I think against someone like Josh Emmett, who's going to be supremely conditioned for 25 minutes, I think you need to be cautious with your energy expenditure, because you don't want to be left vulnerable to someone that that's a good question. Should Arnold Allen have got a shot over Josh Emmett? I don't know. I mean, I feel like Arnold Allen's got the buzz around his name, but I don't know if he's making enough noise at the moment. Maybe the UFC feel like Josh Emmett's got a limited amount of fights left in his body, and Arnold Allen's got more longevity. I would say Arnold Allen's going to be here a lot longer than Josh Emmett is, so it might be a prioritization in that way. It might be stylistically that they feel like Yair Rodriguez would be a really good interim champ, and the best matchup for him is Josh Emmett. That could also be a highly likely possibility. Yeah, I don't know. Arnold Allen's going to get there regardless. I feel like the performances that he's having at the moment, and the fact that he's just about to turn the corner and realize himself. That might sound like a strange thing to say, but sometimes a fighter can have a performance and it not really sink in for a couple of days, and then they go back and they think to themselves, you know what, I just did that. That was really impressive. I've even impressed myself. And then that knock on of confidence then spurs them on to even greater performances. I think we see it sometimes when someone becomes a champion. Like, I think Usman becoming the champion, he became a better fighter when he was the champion because of his confidence of, I'm the champion, what are you going to do? and, you know, adding Trevor Whitman's striking into it. Very, very simple, straightforward stuff. But simple enough for him to grasp quickly and put into practice, which means that he would then benefit. It's like making an investment, right? If you can make a small investment and make a bit of money straight away on that investment, it's going to encourage you to invest more. It's also going to encourage you that making investments is a good thing. So by taking someone like Usman, this is a mad tangent, isn't it? Take someone like Usman and you go, okay, I'm going to invest a jab cross into you. And then you're going to go into your next fight and you're going to use that jab cross against someone that you know really well, that has always been a handful on the training mats because of his powerful looping punches. I'm talking about Gilbert Burns. And then you go, okay, use this jab cross and win this fight. And then you go, wow, that jab cross, that investment of learning that jab cross has been excellent. What else can you teach me? And then it goes on from that. And I think sometimes that can be from an outward source like Trevor Whitman. And I think it can be from an inward source. And I think that's where Arnold Allen is right now. I think he must be sitting there looking at that Dan Hooker performance going, you know what? I'm getting there. Yeah. What do you say? What do you say?
We had a question from the Surfer Dude, yeah. 1984. Your favorite walkout song?
That's a good question. It might be a good place to wrap on that one. In fact, I'll have a quick look through Twitter first before we wrap. My favorite, so it depends whether it's for me. I can tell you my least favorites. If anybody else walks out to Jump Around by House of Pain, or Carla Esparza did it last night, and I love it. What's it, shipping out to Boston? I was at a UFC event once and three people came out to that same song. Like, it's just, it's sometimes songs are just done to death. I used to go through different songs when I was fighting. My first two fights, as I hinted at before, I came out to Drag the Waters by Pantera. And of course, anybody that knows Pantera kind of knows the general vibe. But Drag the Waters it's got a particularly kind of gristly intro to it that always kind of got the hairs on my back of my neck standing up and made me feel like I could go and bite someone's nose off. And I came out to it with my first two fights. And my first fight, I don't remember the walkout. And the other thing as well is that this was another good learning experience for me, that I don't get fired up for fights the way that Paul Daly gets fired up for fights. Because Paul Daly gets fired up for fights. He gets, he's like, ready. And then he kind of calms it down. And he's got that simmering under the surface. And he manages to maintain that simmering under the surface and put it into a left hook. I don't do the simmering under the surface. Once I'm there, I'm like, yeah. And it's kind of taken over me. So my second fight against Paul Jenkins, I didn't even walk along the regular route to the ring. I went through chairs. Must have looked stupid in hindsight, honestly. I was so fucking angry. I was so pumped up and I was just marching through chairs, pulling them out of the way, trying to get to the ring fast as I could. Yeah, so that didn't work out for me, to cut a long story short. So I kept switching it up. I used some Kano. P's and Q's by Kano was a good one. I don't know. I think the favorite one that I came out to, which I don't know as most people appreciated when I was walking out to it, but I thought it was quite clever. Nowhere to Run by Martha and the Vandellas. I hope so. It's either that or there's like a hot air balloon just above us and someone's pulling the fire. That's what it sounds like, doesn't it? Someone trying to attack my house with a flamethrower. Yeah, drag the waters. No, Nowhere to Run by Martha and the Vandellas. Brilliant. Nowhere to run to, baby. Loved it. I came out to the game once as well. Time to play the game. That was in Nottingham. Yeah, I didn't use England Belongs to Me by Cox Barry until I made my debut in the UFC, and it immediately became my song. And I did three fights with it. Four fights with it, and then we re-recorded it. They asked me if I wanted to go to the studio. Then I came out to the next four fights to the new version and got my ass handed to me. So there's a lesson for you. In fact, that's just a lesson generally. If ever you're doing a walkout and your mate decides he's going to come and rap for you along the way, or you're even going to do the music yourself, don't do it. It's just bad luck. It just seems to be general combat sports bad luck. If you're anything to do with the music and the walkout, no, it's not going to work. You're going to get your ass beaten. Yeah? Let me see what Twitter's saying. I often neglect Twitter. What we got? Who do I think is next for Zhang? I mean, I think it's going to have to be Rose unless she's not keen, really. And she might not be keen. She might not be keen at all. I don't know. Lemos? Amanda Lemos? It's the one that makes the most sense, I suppose. Yeah. What else? Izzy wins that fight 8 times out of 10. Do I agree? I don't know. I think I edge slightly more towards Pereira now than I did before that fight. Even though Izzy was doing well and winning, I feel like aside from cardio, Alex was really unaffected by him. I probably go 6 or 7 times for Izzy. The times when he can get away with not getting cracked with a big left hook. Because I think he's got the ability and the skills and the speed to outpoint. But I don't know. He looked pressured in that fight. He looked like he knew what he was up against with Pereira. And he styled it as best he could. You know, it was a kickboxing match. It was years ago. But yeah, I think when he stood in front of him, he was like, shit. It might have been that whole get-up that he wore at the weigh-ins with that peacock thing on his head, didn't he? Terrifying. Scary dude. Yeah, all good. I think we should wrap it there. I think that's good. Make sure you check out Manscaped, manscaped.com, the sponsor for the aftermath. Thank you, Manscaped, for sponsoring us. If you use the code FULLREPTILE, you will get 20% off and you'll get free shipping. And if you get the platinum, what's it called? The ultra platinum package, you'll get the body wash and the shampoo and conditioner and the deodorant as well. Definitely worth getting. All good products. And this thing's awesome. Go and get yourself one. You need one. And if you don't know it, someone else knows that you need one. You might get one for Christmas. How about that? You don't want that. You want to get one for yourself so you don't have that embarrassment of someone else going, please, for everybody else. All right. See you next time.